got a real good feeling.
You're listening to the Coffee and Crypto Podcast with Crypto Jeb, bringing you the best and most updated news about cryptocurrency. Tune in every morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern to watch this podcast live on our YouTube channel.
Hey guys, what's going on? Smay here. And today we're going to be talking about Bitcoin.
Great intro. Great intro.
All right. And I'm also joined here by my good friend, Tim.
I am his good friend, Tim. Jeb, I think he was just in the comments. Pretty much he woke up this morning and Rona reared its ugly head. For those who didn't see our post yesterday, Jeb tested positive for coronavirus, COVID-19. So the hope is that he will be joining us because we ended up, due to that being in our office, everyone's now at home. So that's why we're here on a Zoom call. However, I am hoping that very, very, very soon, maybe even later today, Jeb will be able to make a video. We shall see. But hopefully at least tomorrow morning, he'll be back on the show. But that doesn't mean that Bitcoin and crypto stop doing things. So we are still here. We are still going to update you guys. I actually am really excited about the show today and where we're going to go with it, because we've had some boring news for a while now. And not that this was the news that we wanted, but this is news to cover and talk about that has a lot of implications. I've seen a lot of people in chat talking about, well, we're obviously in a bear market. You know, I don't know. Like, it, obviously, the price.
All right, I turned the audio up. Does it sound better?
Am I louder now? I know I saw somebody say the price.
Guys, I'm sorry for that intro. I'm just right now trying to like run three things at once, so it is a little bit distracting.
This is fun.
Well, this will be fun. We're gonna get this done.
We're gonna be good. I'll make sure to talk loudly. But either way, as we jump into it, we definitely due to this. Unless you were under a rock this morning and last night, Bitcoin is below 30, and we are going to definitely be breaking this down for you. There's a really interesting article that I found thanks to our good friends Altcoin Daily. Make sure if you do not go and watch them, you need to go join their channel. They are awesome at not only just finding great articles, but kind of breaking them down and doing research. So that was it was really cool to get to watch them, and it actually, I was able to go read that article, and we're gonna be talking about that today. But Smate, before we get going, do you have anything you want to say to the people?
Yeah, guys, stick with us. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a good stream, and I love you guys.
Yes. Well, then we will go ahead. Let me jump to the first story because it is.
I've maxed out Tim's audio. It's not going to get any louder than that.
Is it still not here?
It's maxed up. Yeah, maybe clip it to your beard or something.
Yeah, here we go. Let's see. Is this better? Smay?
Yeah,
you can barely even tell it's attached to me. Now that is that's gonna be annoying, but you know, we'll see how that goes. Let's go to the first article.
Oh no. Guys, you thought yesterday was gonna be a train wreck.
I will hold it. This is probably the best way to do it. But first story we have here, Bitcoin drops below 30,000 for the first time in 4 weeks. Wall Street is seeing too much froth, and currently virus jitters are triggering widespread panic selling of every top forming asset, including Bitcoin, said one analyst. This is ironic because obviously it's also affecting this video because Jeb is not here. So COVID is sucky. Anyway, reading the rest of the article, this will kind of set up where we go with the rest of the video. Bitcoin dropped below 30,000, breaking below a trading range that had held for the past 4 weeks and potentially setting up the largest cryptocurrency for deeper price declines. The cryptocurrency was trading around 29,998 at press time and is down about 5% over the past week. Bitcoin has been locked in the broad price range of 30,000 to 40,000 since mid-May and briefly broke below 30,000 mark on June 22nd. The cryptocurrency fleetingly traded at 29,700 a day after the People's Bank of China ordered the country's major financial institutions to stop facilitating crypto transactions. I'm expecting a strong dip towards 22,000, said Patrick Huser, head of trading at Crypto Finance AG, in a Telegram interview on Monday. Wall Street is seeing too much froth, and current virus jitters are triggering widespread panic selling of every top performing asset, with Bitcoin being right at the top of the list, according to Edward Moya, senior market analyst at Onada. Moya said that Bitcoin could be vulnerable to a flash crash towards $20,000 level, which should attract many institutional buyers that have been waiting patiently on the sidelines. If the stock market sell-off intensifies, Bitcoin and Ethereum will easily extend their decline, said Moya. Katie Stockton, founder of the managing partner at Fair Lead Strategy, said that the consolidation phase of Bitcoin is currently experiencing is neutral. But in her view, she said a breakout is more likely than a breakdown. So I'm going to go ahead and stop right there. Can I come back here full screen? Let's discuss this really quick before we move on, because I think that's going to be the leading question of the day, Smay. A lot of things are said right there. You know, we see the price dropping. Again, as we've seen in chat, people are saying, hey, we are for sure in a bear market already. We've seen the price drop. However, what that article mentioned, and we're going to definitely talk about today, is institutional interest. Smay, what are your thoughts about what institutions are probably doing right now throughout this whole process?
I mean, honestly, I think they're probably wanting to gear up to buy some more when it's a little bit lower, right? Like, I think they're going to look for the opportunity to get as low an entry as possible, because I think a lot of these institutions are now starting to realize that, you know, Bitcoin is, you know, a pretty big deal. Like, I think a lot of people are like, okay, if it's going to go up, we know it's going to go up. So now that, like, I think they're not as iffy about it as they were a couple years ago. You know, a couple years ago, they're like, what is this? You know, this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. But now they're like, oh, I need to get in on this, you know? And yeah, they didn't get in on it before. So they're like, well, what can we do to get this down to the point that I can hop in and feel good about it? So, I think they're going to want it. They're wanting it to drop down a little bit lower so they can hop in. And then once everybody's on the boat, we're looking towards a pretty healthy little rally there. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Real quick, I saw a super chat that we are going to discuss before we jump in to the biggest story. I think, like I said, we're going to be here a little bit while this article here in just a second. But Tommy Lou just said, feel better, Jeb. Tim and Smay are holding it down. Don't worry. Three rock stars. Thank you, my friend Tommy. Thank you so much. Yes, Jeb, please feel better, because
we need you, Jeb.
I very much like when Jeb is able to lead the show and we can just be the two counterparts. But we're going to continue to do our best to hold up. So before we move on, make sure, even though there's no Jeb, make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. I think there's several of you right now who have probably been watching for a while now. You're still not subscribed. You just check in every single day. Go ahead and support the channel. Hit the subscribe button. Smash the like. Let's try to get this video up to, I don't know. What is your expectation, Smay, for this video? Before we end live. Well, that's, oh, come on.
Little expectations. Well, no, little I say little expectations, right? Which means, all right, I'm
give a number. Give a number, and let's see if we can let's see if the viewers can outdo your prediction.
A number for likes?
Yeah, before we end the live stream.
I'm going to say, I don't know. I don't know if I trust you guys. I think we're going to get maybe 300 likes.
What the heck? We're literally 70 away from that. All right. I am going to say I believe that this can get us to, I think we can get to 800. Like, we have 828 people watching right now. We for sure can get to 800. So, guys, prove Smay wrong. If you want, prove me wrong. Beat 800. But we are going to jump into our story, which is it's pretty big. Okay, so this is the whole dilemma. Is right now there is an ongoing argument happening amongst bears and bulls of whether or not we are actually in a bull or bear market. What's
hold
going on?
Do you see what Jeff said in the chat?
I can't look at the chat and read articles.
Yeah,
fine. We're not that.
He says, send me a Zoom link, Smay. I'm joining.
What? Oh,
hold on, wait. Hold on. I got to turn off our display capture so I can send him a link real quick. So, guys, we're going to be right back. We're going to be right back. We're going to get Jeb in.
We're taking it.
You can still hear us.
Temporary timeout.
You can still hear us, but I had to turn it off so you guys don't accidentally join our Zoom call.
What the heck? Jeb's coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very glad. He unfortunately was not part of the planning meeting this morning, so I think he's going to be more speculative.
I think he's disgusted with what we're doing right now.
That is a potential probability for sure.
All right. We're sending Jeb the link. All right. And we're back.
All right. Oh, man.
Hello, everybody. All right. I guess Jeb's joining.
Is Jeb in yet?
No, not yet.
Come on, Jeb.
This guy. Oh, here we go. Here we go. I think he's in now. He should be in.
Hey.
Hello. What? I can't hear you.
We can't hear you, though.
You can't hear me.
No, I can hear you now.
You in. You in.
What's up?
Jeff, come on. Come on. What is this? What is this stunt you're pulling?
Yes.
What's up, Smay?
What is this stunt you're pulling on us right now?
Everything hurts, but I'm here. Let's do it.
Were you that disgusted with what we were trying to do?
No, it's been a while. I wanted to join.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
Before we jump in, we got another super chat from Sup. I'm Owen. He said Jeb is the man. Absolutely pulling through clutch with the COVID, but still on the show. I think there's a lot of people though that potentially, I don't want to say a lot of people. There's just some people. My favorite person, shout out to Luke. I know you secretly love me with all of your heart, but you always do a great job of challenging me and giving me constructive criticism that makes me better. Unfortunately, Jeb was not part of the planning meeting, though, so guess what? I have to read the rest of the articles.
Yes, he does.
So Jeb is just going to have to listen in and then
give his take
where we're going. So let's go ahead. Jeb, are you ready for us to dive in? Because I really think this article is going – it's long. It's complicated, and there's a lot of thought that goes into it. But are you ready for it?
I am ready. Let's see it.
All right. So the first thing I need to do, let me go ahead and share my screen. Boom. All right. So this is really cool. I didn't even know this existed. Glassnode has an insights page, which is really cool. So this week, it kind of goes through and Glassnode kind of breaks down the different argument. It talks about the bear versus bull argument. And so we'll go ahead and jump on in. So it says here I'm going to jump down to setting the stage, actually. Let's go right here. Setting the stage. To start our analysis, we will begin with the UTXO realized price distribution metric, which presents an on-chain volume profile across pricing buckets. Zones where significant clusters of volume arise can indicate that a large number of coins changed hands at those prices and thus represents a concentration of cost basis. Between 31,000 and 34,000 coin volume equivalent to 10.5% of its circulating supply has transacted, outsizing the previous high volume node established in the $50,000 to $60,000 range. However, the market is trading at the lower end of the support node, and there are comparatively few on-chain supportive levels below until 18,000.8. So this is where we're going to jump into it. That was just kind of setting the stage. Just so you guys know, this article kind of goes through and it first talks about bear market and then talks about bull market, but we're going to take it piece by piece. And Jeb, I can't wait to hear what your thoughts are about the points that are made here. So the bearish case for Bitcoin. We will start a bearish case by considering the institutional demand flows, which continue to be a necessary source of capital inflows to reach and sustain higher valuations. In the limelight this week, will be the performance of the Grayscale or the GBTC product, with around 31,900 GBTC shares unlocking through the remainder of July. So obviously this was the big thing everyone was talking about, everyone's freaking out about. It's potentially this price drop that, you know, we talked about the volatility that was going to come from this great unlocking, and that's what Glassnode is kind of jumping on here. But, you know, moving on, it says the GBTC market price continues to trade at a notable discount last week, ranging between negative 11% and down to negative 15.3%. Whilst the discount has recovered from the absolute lows of negative 21.3% to NAV, any significant and persistent discount suggests lackluster demand and can also attract capital away from spot Bitcoin markets. So one of the things I was watching, Jeb, and maybe you can comment on here. I don't know if it says this down here or not, but what someone was talking about is actually right now, and it was when this article was written, so I think this was yesterday, so the price was a little bit higher. But right now, you could have gotten into the Bitcoin trust at a cheaper rate than buying into Bitcoin, because obviously that rate was set back in January. But what they were saying was, listen, if institutions aren't even wanting to get into Bitcoin, the Grayscale Bitcoin trust, why would they buy Bitcoin at its current price? Jeb, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have anything, or do you want me to continue before you're really able to form an opinion there?
Go ahead and continue, just because there's so much that I'm trying to get caught up on that it's hard for me to formulate an opinion, because I'm not exactly sure what's going on.
I have something. Can you stop sharing your screen for just a second?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so you can go to full screen.
Let me. There we go.
There we go. I just want to shout out my good friend, Bob. Literally, his name is just Bob. He donated $75. He said, COVID schmovid. Jeb's the Jedi Master. Split this three ways dinner on me tonight, gentlemen.
There Thank we you, go. Bob.
Come on.
Let's go, there Bob.
Go. Nice guy.
What a nice $5. Guy.
Thank you, man.
That's all right, we're going to jump back into it. So pretty much what we need to think through, the argument there is our institutions wanting to buy Bitcoin right now. Because, again, we talked about that was a big thing, is what are the institutions doing? Do institutions want to buy Bitcoin right now when they're not even necessarily willing to buy the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust? This is a question we need to hold on and consider as we move forward. So the purpose of ETF has also been seen a slowdown in the net inflows this week after a period of relatively strong demand through May and June. The week closed with the largest net outflows of negative 90.76 Bitcoin since mid-May. Similar to the GBTC product, this indicates that institutional demand remains relatively weak across these regulated products. So again, that kind of backs up what I was showing here. We can see right here, you know, we're hitting new levels. We're hitting a red candle again, not significantly, but the last time we were hitting significant red candles was right here when we were dropping in May. Last, on the institutional demand side, OTC or over-the-counter desk holdings have seen a net inflow of around 1,780 Bitcoin over the last 2 weeks, moving against the structural trend of outflows in place since November 2020. It remains to be seen whether this net inflow is just a short-term impact or early signs of a reversal in the balance of supply and demand. So again, we look right here, looking at the chart, obviously hitting really nice high levels as we were doing our bull cycle and running up to 60,000, began to slow down. And obviously we're coming back down, and then now we're starting to rise again. On-chain activity remains extremely muted this week, with mempools clearing and transaction volume continues to fall. As the mempools or meme pools, which, Jeb, do you know which one that's pronounced? Meme pools or mempools?
It's pronounced a mempool. It stands for mempool. Memory pool. It's the number of transactions waiting to be mined.
Yeah. As the mempool empties, the average block size has fallen by 15% to 20%, down to 1.103 megabytes. This indicates that demand for Bitcoin block space and on-chain settlement is low. Mined blocks are not full, and the utilization of the network is relatively low. So before we move on, do you want to comment on that at all, Jeb, or do you want me to continue to move on?
Yeah. So this is actually a really good thing, and I want people to realize this, because whether or not institutions are buying Bitcoin right now, and whether or not there's a lot of transaction volume going on exchange right now, is not really what I think we ought to be focusing so much on. I think what we should be focusing on is there, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's not important. What I'm saying is that I think we can look at mempool data. We can look at the amount of institutions getting into Bitcoin or not, and we can get freaked out because we can say, oh, well, the institutions aren't joining. The thing is, we know that there are a lot of institutions who have come out and said and are actively looking at buying Bitcoin down at these price levels. And guys, to be fair, I've been out of the market for the last 4 days because I've been dealing with COVID. But I can tell you that no matter what Bitcoin's price is doing, the lower it goes, the more interested these institutions are going to be. Just because they're not joining right now doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to. I was actually talking to Greg, who's our head of he's our curriculum specialist, and he's probably watching the stream right now. I was talking to him yesterday, and I told him that generally speaking, what you'll see happen during a big bull market or a big bear market or a big rally or a big correction is that the market will go too far. It'll rally too far to the upside. Or if it's going into the downtrend, in the downward direction, it'll downtrend way too far. So let's say that Bitcoin's intrinsic value, if you will, is $50,000, and you're in a rally, there is a good chance that the market's going to rally to $55,000 before you correct, because the market likes to go a little bit too far. I think that's what we're doing right now. Is the real value of Bitcoin, if you will, the intrinsic value, what Bitcoin should be worth, is probably right around $25,000 to $30,000, but the market has a tendency to go a little bit too far. And I think the institutions realize that. And I think they agree with some of the analysis we've done on this channel, where we believe, or at least I believe, that Bitcoin, its bottom probably isn't in. I think we're going to go down into those mid-20s, which is what I've been talking about for the last 2 months. I think a lot of those institutions might not be getting in now because they're thinking that they're going to get a better entry price later. And that's not even to include the fact that a lot of these institutions have a lot of sway over the market, to the point where you could even call it market manipulation. So they might be looking for much lower entry prices, which might be why they aren't getting in as quickly right now as they might otherwise be.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we talked about that a little bit ago. We got a little bit of backlash from it, Jeb. I remember us saying, we think, you know, when we bounced off of 29, I can't remember the date, it was sometime in June, but we started rallying. We were pushing up towards 36,000, I believe. And we were like, man, I don't think we're done below, you know, 30,000. And people are like, No, we're ready. We're in phase D of Wyckoff, and we're about to hit new all-time. And it's like, No, the institution's just, you know,
we'll it's not popular, that. but it's important that we look, it's important that,
yeah.
So this is something for everybody watching this, and thank you very much for everyone who's tuned in. And by the way, shout out to you, Tim and Smay and Zach for yesterday and hosting today. Guys, drop a plus one in the chat for them. They are absolutely killing it while I've been gone. I really am so very thankful that I have amazing people behind me that are able to help support everything so that I'm able to actually take a couple of days off when I get something like COVID. So thank you so much to them. But I think it's important that one of the things we do on this channel is that even when it's sometimes not popular for us to say something, we will say it because, you know, what we want to give you not only what you want to know, but also what you need to know. And sometimes that requires us saying things that aren't very popular.
Yeah. Before we move on, I saw two super chats, which are pretty crazy. So Kenneth Gardner first said the stock market is rebounding. It should help crypto. You know, Kenneth, I am not paying attention to the stock market necessarily right this very second, but I do know from things and following things when the stock market seems to have a problem, you know, Bitcoin seems to have a problem, crypto seems to have a problem. And when it goes back up, we have been seen kind of in the same light, which is, Jeb, if you want to comment on that real quickly, do you like that Bitcoin and crypto in, as a whole is kind of seen in the same light as the stock market, or what are your thoughts there?
So there is a good amount of correlation between Bitcoin and the stock market. In fact, you can go on the chart, and I'll show it here in a second, and compare the SPY to the Bitcoin chart, and there is quite a bit of overlap. I don't know how I'm going to get this to work. Well, no, I take that back. It's going to be hard to show. But nevertheless, there is quite a bit of correlation between the S&P 500 and the SPY and the Dow Jones Industrial Average and things like that with Bitcoin. A lot of people look at them as very similar markets when they're really not. Bitcoin is a hedge against the US dollar. The stock market is built on the US dollar. So when you look at the US dollar and you look at the fact that it's been inflating so much over the last 150 years, that shows up in the stock market. You can almost look at the stock market as just the inverse of inflation. The market doesn't actually necessarily change as much as you think it does. A lot of it has to do with the fact that there is inflation going on. It's a similar thing to gold. Gold almost isn't changing in price. It's that the underlying asset, the US dollar, is changing in price. So I think that there is a pretty strong correlation between Bitcoin and the stock market right now. But I think as Bitcoin matures, we're going to start to see more of an inverse correlation there, because I think the stock market follows the US dollar a lot more, where Bitcoin is obviously much more of a hedge against the dollar.
Hmm. Okay. Last super chat, and then we're going to jump back into this story because it is really important. But it is from Rowdy Mr. B, who donated $100, saying, "Good idea, Bob. Let's make it a steak dinner."
Let's go. Thank you.
Let's go, guys. That's awesome.
We got some great fans. Like, you guys are amazing. Absolutely. You are the reason we're here. Oh, I think as we said that, there's one more that just came in from the doctor. It's saying, Look up reverse repo banks are prepping for a market crash. More fundamentals for Bitcoin, team Jebba Walkies.
Sounds familiar. Good. Someone said that hair, Jeb. COVID must be strong. I literally rolled out of bed, got dressed, and said, "I'm jumping in this call. I don't want to be a part of this." I literally woke up like an hour ago and laid in bed watching YouTube videos.
Yeah. Smay, did you have any thoughts before we jump in? Do you have any thoughts you wanted to chime in, or are you good?
I have no thoughts.
All right. Sounds good. We're going to jump back to my screen. Let me share it real quick. And we're going to keep moving on because we are not yet done with the arguments that would suggest that potentially we are, in fact, in a bear market. So we're going to start right here. Entity adjusted on-chain volume, 14-day EMA basis, remains down 65.8% from the highs in April. The Bitcoin network is currently settling at 5.3, is that Bitcoin per day? I think, yeah. Compared to the 15.5 billion in daily volume settled at the 2021 peak. This demonstrates relatively low demand for value settlement remains in place. So you're going to see here on the chart, this is going to talk about the volume we're about to talk about, but look at this volume right here. We definitely see this volume start to drop over here. Although we see a small little rally right here at the end of it, but of the transaction volume that is being settled, a dominant majority appear to be coins releasing losses. If we compare the total value of released losses and profits, we see losses in pink. And we're going to see this in just a second when I scroll down, have consistently been larger than profits, green, since the sell-off in May. Median losses this week were around 353 million per day, more than 2.2x greater than the 158 million a day in released profits. Whilst there, that word again, I love it. Whilst these volumes are much lower than the 2022 capitulation events of 1.60 billion and 744 million respectively. This demonstrates that investors holding underwater positions continue to spend and sell their coins. So you can see here, that's the chart he was talking about with the pink and the green. You know, this is the profits being realized. This is the losses being realized. So we are definitely seeing that continue. We can also assess that much of the coin supply remains underwater to gauge how much supply may become additional sell side pressure. The chart below shows the approximate 6.2 million Bitcoin equivalent to 33% of the circulating supply is currently holding an unrealized loss. So again, this is people, Jeb, correct me if I'm wrong. These are people who bought low and where we are right now. They bought at prices higher than where we're currently at. So they're sitting here holding despite the fact that they're in a massive loss. And so it looks to me like this is the largest we've seen in a long time. Although I will pause, Jeb, and get your opinion, because to me, you know, this shows signs of hodling. Whereas you would think a lot of these people, if they really were scared, would go ahead and just get out, cut their losses and leave. What are your thoughts on that, Jeb?
Yeah. So there's a lot of factors at play here. So you got to realize that number one, a lot of transactions happened up at those high values. So a lot of people were buying Bitcoin up at $50,000 to $65,000, and that's why 6 million Bitcoin are currently being held at a loss. I didn't realize it was that high. That is a pretty high number, 33% of circulating volume. The thing you got to keep in mind though, is that we're seeing a lot of that change. So we saw that that most addresses were in profit when we were at $50,000 to $65,000, and now we're seeing a large amount of addresses are at a loss. I will point out though, 33% might be a new high, but it's still only 1/3 of the Bitcoin in existence is at a loss. It means 2/3 of the Bitcoin is in profit, which is the vast majority of people. 66% of the market then is still in profit, even with Bitcoin being down 50%. So just for perspective's sake, we got to keep that in mind. But also, I think it's important to realize that the longer you spend in a certain trading range, be it $60,000 to $65,000 or where we are now around $30,000, more people are going to be transacting that Bitcoin, and they're going to be selling Bitcoin that is a loss for them, and they're going to go ahead and liquidate that, or not liquidate it, but sell it and then change that. Or if they're very profitable, then they're going to sell it and then people are going to buy it. The point is that when you do that and you spend a prolonged period of time at a certain price level, then eventually the market kind of resets itself and the market gets a lot more used to being at that level because there's so much transaction going on. So I think that even though we're seeing a lot of sell side pressure going on and a lot of Bitcoin being sold at a loss right now, that's actually kind of a good thing because it's a way of releasing pressure. It's a way of releasing stress from the bubble, if you will, in a slow but also a sustainable way. It's not like we're seeing a bubble where it just boom pops and explodes and we crash like 70-80% in 2 days. We're seeing it kind of slowly deflate, and that's a much more healthy way of seeing all of these losses get played out and get transitioned into hands that are more likely to hold them in the long run. So I think it's actually a very good thing. When we see the markets pull back, we see a lot of this churn, a lot of this turnover, and it actually resets how people feel about their cryptocurrency. And then all of a sudden you have people feeling like, oh, $30,000, I got that at a steal. And it starts, as time goes on, to reset people's perspective on the market. And it ends up being a very good thing, in my opinion. It doesn't mean that things are over yet. If we're seeing that much Bitcoin at a loss, it probably does mean that we have some more bearishness to come, as we've been talking about, but it is a good sign that we're moving in the right direction. We just don't know how long that's going to take.
All right. We got a ton of super chats.
I see. So we got, that's what I was looking at too.
Oh my gosh. They're kind of blowing my mind a little bit.
You should start with the Matt C one and then we should be good from there.
We did the lookup refresh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
So start with Matt C. We have, I like that they followed the storyline, guys. They decided to continue this little storyline. It says, might as well have some dessert with that meal. Get well, Jeb.
Then I am pretty hungry, so I will do that.
We got one from Eddie Parrott that says, this should get you a couple of ketchup packets, LOL. We appreciate you just as much. Another $100 donation from Bob. Woo! He says, maybe add some lobster with that dinner. We love you guys and appreciate the hard work. You're all in my prayers. And I believe you're all young enough to not be worried, but it's still serious. I lost my father to this virus, so take it serious, please. God bless you all.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, I think we had a friend in South Florida this last week whose dad passed away from COVID. So it is, for sure.
It's very serious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of our friends from Greenhouse, South Florida, his dad passed away this last week. So it was, yeah, really sad. And, you know, we were hoping that COVID was done. It's not quite. And so, yeah, if those of you out there, you know, I think, you know, there's a level of, hey, we don't want to live with a spirit of fear and be, you know, just held back from everything that we're supposed to be doing. However, at the same time, we cannot just run around recklessly as if we are untouchable and invincible. So there is a level, you know, even this, I think, you know, taking a, you know, pause, this is even a level of, like, you know, as Christians, I think I see some Christians on, you know, both sides, some Christians living in ultimate fear and acting like they can't do anything. And on the flip side, some Christians acting like, oh, who cares? It is what it is, you know, and what they're really communicating is screw everybody else. You know, as Christians, I think that we, you know, if you're in chat and you're a Christian, I hope you agree with us here that, man, our job is to really communicate the love of Christ. And one of the ways we can love people is by not living in fear, but ultimately caring about people and making sure we are doing everything within our power to protect and, you know, I'm just like help other people and making sure we're not part of the problem, but be part of the solution. But
guys, keep yourselves safe, guys. Like, especially with the new strains and variants going around. I would say if you can try to mask up again, just it's something simple you can do. Just anything simple you can do to kind of keep yourself safe, hand sanitize, so on. And just try not to go any unnecessary gatherings until this kind of settles down again. Then, just guys, keep yourself safe.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead. I'm going to jump back to the charts. We're going to continue this story because, again, we're still, we have not even made it through to the bull argument. We're still working on the bearish argument, which there is a lot of evidence for, but we'll cover all of that. So we're going to move out, and this is closing out. So finally, to close out our bearish case, we can see that the number of new on-chain entities is still down 28.6% from the high set in February 2021. The decline is not yet as severe as it was after the 2017 blow-off top. However, it remains to be seen if this metric stabilizes or declines further. So summarizing this all up, everything we talked about, just in case you guys are joining in, we're talking about the case of, is this a bear market or are we potentially still in a bull market that just had a bear trend? So the market is trading at a low end of high on-chain volume cluster with very little cost basis support between 31,000 and 18,000. The GPTC or the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust discounts persist, declining purpose of ETF inflows and over-the-chain desk inflows suggest a lackluster institutional demand. Although that's something that we should talk about because there's other metrics that show potentially we are seeing an institutional demand, but we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. On-chain activity volume and entities remain significantly down from the highs. Utilization of the Bitcoin network for value transactions suggests a low demand. Losses continue to be realized on-chain and a total of 6.2 million are currently held at an unrealized loss. These coins may well form overhead resistance and a sell pressure. So that is the case for the bear market. Before I move on to the bull market, Jeb, do you have any thoughts, any concerns, or do you want to go ahead and jump into the counter argument?
I think we're good for that.
All right, let's do it. The bull case, the bull case for Bitcoin. After painting a relatively bleak picture with respect to immediate demand and network utilization, there remains positive signs across many on-chain metrics, particularly long-range indicators and supply metrics. To start, let's return to the idea of on-chain entities, a topic in which has been the source of some confusion as of late. We define an entity as a unique on-chain cluster of associated addresses. If a cluster of address interacts and demonstrates heuristics to suggest a single owner, they will be classified as a single entity. The chart below represents three metrics telling a holistic picture for on-chain entities. So we're going to see in green, sending entities are often associated with the UTXO destruction. Most wallets enforce single-use addresses when spending, which typically reduces the entity count. At present, we see fewer spending entities indicating less spending of UTXOs and a preference for hodling. In pink, we're going to see receiving entities. They are the converse associated with UTXO creation, new owners, and new accumulation. June and July have seen strong growth in receiving entities. And the last one in blue is the net entities growth, taking the difference between destroyed and created entities. Given the destroyed entities is declining and the created entities are increasing, we have a positive aggregate net growth. So let's go ahead and look at this real quickly. You guys will see, as we said, the amount of ones being destroyed is going very low. The amount of ones being created is starting to rise, bringing our total up high. This is something I've been talking about for a while now, is that one of the things, and Jeb, you know, chime in here, one of the things you do not see in a bear market is a lot of new entities growing, a lot of new wallets being opened up. However, despite the fact that we see the price accumulating and slightly dropping, we're still seeing new entities come up. Jeb, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. You typically don't see a lot of new involvement in an ecosystem during a bear market. It just isn't the way these things work. Normally during a bear market, one of the definitions of a bear market for most people is a decline in the number of people interested in trading or investing in the industry or the space or the sector, whatever you want to call it. I think this is a good example of that. We're seeing a lot more growth right now, which leads me to believe that, yes, we're in a big correction that is going to last a little while and we're not done with it. But if we're really in a bear market, I've been through a couple of bear markets by this time. Normally, yeah, you see interest jump off the metaphorical cliff. You don't see the number of entities continue to increase. Now, we've seen popularity on YouTube and things like Google search traffic go down. But in general, the number of entities is still going up. The number of institutions interested in the space is still going up. The amount of news about new regulatory clarity, new mining coming online. The vast majority of the fundamental metrics are pointing towards bullishness. Now, of course, we saw earlier that there are a lot of wallets that are unprofitable right now. But I mean, that makes sense. A lot of people bought up around $60,000 to $65,000. When you really look at the vast majority of the metrics, they look like this. They are very bullish. It just takes the sentiment catching up with those metrics. And I'll add this to finish. As these metrics and as these fundamentals continue to improve, they will get farther and farther away from the price, mm-hmm. and the price will be much more inclined to move towards it. Think of it like a rubber band. The further you pull a rubber band, the more tension there is, and when you release it, then it's going to start moving together a lot quicker. That's kind of what we're seeing right now. These fundamentals are continuing to grow, and the longer we spend down at these price levels, such as $29,000, as we're seeing this morning, the more likely it is that we're going to see a massive rally because the fundamentals have run so far ahead of the price. Now, that's not necessarily something that's going to happen overnight. That could happen. I mean, that's always going to be something that's happening. But my point is, the further we go down, as the fundamentals go up, the further apart you're pulling that rubber band and the more tension there is trying to pull Bitcoin's price back to the upside.
Yeah. We're going to move on. To support this observation, we can see that the exchange net position change has reverted back to a net outflow after a significant period of net inflows. Exchanges are currently seeing a rate of net outflows around 36,300 Bitcoin per month. So we see here, again, these are the outflows, meaning people taking Bitcoin off. And we see the green is where people are putting Bitcoin back on. I think it says this down here in a second, but this is an extremely bullish signal that we're seeing the amount of Bitcoin come off the exchanges. That is a form of hodling. What I'm always wondering, you know, Jeb, when you talk about like the Google trends and everything going down, just because Google trends go down, it doesn't take that much intelligence to watch what is happening with not only the US dollar and inflation, but you look at almost all fiat currencies and currencies around the world, people are very aware of it. That is one thing that you have to deal with day in and day out is your money and the prices of things. And I think we have seen a lot of people, and I think we have a long way to go on educating people about Bitcoin, but I think we've seen a lot of people get a little bit more educated on what the purpose of Bitcoin is. They understand not the deep, 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 deep details, but they understand the basis enough to know, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go ahead and get me some Bitcoin. I'm going to hodl it. I'm going to hold it for a rainy day. And I'm going to, you know, fight through this inflation. But moving on, it says here that miners are also demonstrating extreme resilience and desire to accumulate. Despite the extraordinary costs they've incurred as the great migration carries on, it is possible that the additional sell side pressure from offline distressed miners is being more than offset by the extraordinary profitability by remaining operational miners. So again, we see right here, we see the miner accumulation happening right here as they're accumulating more and more again right here, which is again a positive sign. Now I will, before I move on, Jeb, I think this is a great time to potentially, you know, we had a counter argument to one of the bear things, and I think we need to have a counter argument potentially to one of the bullish arguments, and that is in this story right here. So right here, this one is talking about how whales are grabbing the dip as Bitcoin drops below 30,000. This is an article by You Today, and it's kind of actually it has a two-parter that argues with both of them. First of all, you know, we saw in the bear argument that it said that institutions are not interested right now. However, right here it talks about whales are interested, and so as we jump down here. The first thing it talks about, which we were just saying, is we were saying miners are holding their Bitcoin right here. According to CryptoQuant, it says that Bitcoin miners are actually dumping their Bitcoin. I'll read this real quick. It said data shares by Chinese crypto journalist Colin Wu, who covers news related to the blockchain, crypto coins and exchanges, said that Bitcoin miners in the last month have sold several large amounts of Bitcoin, 60 Bitcoins, about six times. The amount of Bitcoin moved to exchange on average totaled 98.6 3 days ago on July 17th. The journalist emphasized that this is the maximum amount since November 3rd of last year. The information shared by Wu was based on a recent chart provided by CryptoQuant. So that's what, this is what I'm talking about right here. You guys can see, let me click on it and let you guys see it a little bit better. Whoop. You guys can see that number has gone up according to this chart right here. I'm not 100% certain what to do with this because we got one person in one chart over here saying that Bitcoin miners are hodling, whereas we have another one saying that they are selling. And again, in the same article, whereas we have one article saying that there's not a lot of interest, we actually right here say that the metrics, if we're going to look at this chart, so that's the headline, whales about 1.7 billion on Bitcoin, the dip. This chart right here shows the interest in the buying of whales continuing to climb up. So I'm not going to read any more of the articles. I think we have covered what we need to, but Jeb, I'm going to go back to full screen for a second. Jeb, what are your thoughts on that? Those countering data inputs, what is your thoughts on what is actually happening with the institutions? What is actually happening with the miners? Which do you think? Obviously, we have CryptoQuant's story and we have Glassnode's story. What are you kind of looking at to make your decision on what to believe?
Well, there's there are certain patterns that show up throughout markets. You're almost always going to see markets operate in a very similar way. You've heard the saying the markets often rhyme, but they normally don't repeat. And I think this is a good example. I think the first thing that we need to realize is that there's always going to be conflicting data. And it's our job as an analyst to really dig deep into it. And I haven't had a chance to dig deep into both of these. So I can't really say, oh, this article was right, this article is wrong. I just don't have that ability at the moment. I can go and look into that, but I haven't done that yet. So I can't say. As analysts, we're always going to have conflicting data. We're always going to have what I call dissonance of analysis. You're going to have MACD saying we're bullish and RSI divergence saying we're bearish. You're going to have resistance saying we should be topping out at $60,000 and we have support saying we're going to bottom out, whatever. The point is, you're going to always have conflicting data. That is what the job of the analyst is. If there were no such thing as conflicting data, then all you'd have to do is read all the data, then boom, you have your answer. There'd be no point in us actually learning analysis. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. But the second thing is that no matter what the data says, we know that the institutions are highly interested in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. We know that they are very interested in it because of the way that they've been acting and the way they've been trying to manipulate the price and the way that they've been moving in the direction of adopting Bitcoin on institutional national levels over the last 6 months. These institutions and the major power players that are worth hundreds of billions of dollars collectively. I mean, we're seeing Visa move in the direction of adopting Bitcoin. They already really have. We've seen over $1 billion worth of transaction volume happening on Visa. If I remember correctly, Visa is a $400 billion company. So we have some big names behind crypto. Whether or not data is showing that today and over the last 2 weeks that we have seen a lot of movement into Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, it's coming. It's going to happen. We've seen it start. We've seen much more talk about institutions and cryptocurrency now over the last year than we ever have in the history of crypto. Not even close. It's not even marginally comparable. I remember when I got into cryptocurrency in 2017 and even on into 2018 and 19, when you saw one multi-billion dollar company get into cryptocurrency, it was front page news and we talked about it for a week because it was a big deal. Now it's just whatever. Oh, we got another Fortune 500 company getting into crypto. So whether or not it looks like money is flowing into Bitcoin on the institutional level right now and the data is talking about the last 2 weeks is frankly irrelevant. We're going to find these institutions buying in lower. And even if they're not buying Bitcoin directly, they're building platforms that help to drive the adoption of Bitcoin, such as Visa setting up their own Bitcoin debit cards and credit cards and everything. So that's the first point. But the second point on the miners is that the miners right now, we have just seen a shift in the way that mining is done on Bitcoin that we have never seen before. We've seen half of Bitcoin's hash rate disappear in 2 weeks. So the data right now on the miners is obviously going to be very strange. Now, like I said, I haven't had a chance to go and dive into the data that we're looking at here on the channel. Tim and Smay have looked at it before, before the stream started, but I wasn't in the stream planning meeting, so I didn't have that opportunity. But whether or not the data is conflicting and whether or not the data is saying one thing or another thing, I think what's important for us to remember is that right now the miners are very profitable. The ones that are still online are incredibly profitable because the hash rate dropped in half. Their electricity costs should be the same. Their hardware costs should be the same. So basically, they just doubled their profitability. So it makes sense that a lot of them would be selling Bitcoin because they are sitting in such a massive profit compared to where they were 3 weeks ago, back before all these miners started going offline. So that's the first point. But the other point is, no matter what the data says on the miners, those miners are not destroyed other than the 1,069 miners that we saw get bulldozed over in Malaysia. That was a rough video to watch. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I know some people in chat saw that. There was a steamroller and they were just destroying them.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday.
We did. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. But the point I'm making here is that there's such a massive shift going on in the market that it's hard to take any data really seriously right now. When a lot of these miners are going to be back online in 2 months, it's going to completely wipe the slate. So,
yeah. No, I even think, like, you know, you look at the chart, and I'll go ahead and share my screen again. Even looking at this chart, we're seeing, yes, throughout June, you know, throughout June and early July, this is when we were seeing the miners sell off. And obviously this is a time where a lot of them from China were being relocated. They probably needed some extra cash to move. But we are seeing, ever since, you know, mid-July, beginning of July, we're seeing that come back. We're actually seeing more miners hold. I think I'm tempted to believe in that this Glassnode chart actually tells a better story of what is happening with miners holding. Also, why would miners hold? Who knows better what Bitcoin is going to be doing than the miners themselves? Why would they be selling right now at this current price? But anyway, I want to move on and continue and finish out this article, and we'll probably call it a day. But if we observe the volume of supply held by strong hands, we can see that hodling appears to be the preferred strategy. Long-term hodlers currently hold 75% of the circulating supply, 6% at a loss, 69% in profit. The bullish squeeze that started past bull markets has historically been triggered by the LTHs. I don't know what that means exactly, Jeb. Maybe you know. Holdings of 65%. Long-term holders, okay, yeah, holdings of 65%, 2X 2013, 75% 2017, and 80% 2020 of the circulating supply. If the current rate of coin maturation persists, long-time holders would hold 80% of the coin supply in around 2 months, although this is not likely to play quite so cleanly, since we know that many coins from May to March were spent and sold. So, you know, here's this chart here kind of talking about all of this, how long we've been holding, what's happening there, but we are seeing an increase happen right there. The illiquid supply change metric supports this observation following a dramatic reversal from distribution in May to hodling and accumulation in June to July. Note that positive values in green and the use of the metrics are results of widespread coin. Ooh, that was nice. Widespread coin dormancy, more illiquid coins with limited spending. Conversely, negative values occur when illiquid coins are spent back into liquid circulation. So we see we did have some happen again right here, but we are now heading back towards the green, back towards the positive. Finally, to round out the bullish case for Bitcoin, we turn to the realized cap hodl waves, which show unmistakable indicators of hodling, coin maturation, and further evidence to the probability of a potential supply squeeze in the works. There are two primary observations. One, structural multi-month declines in younger coin bands, red, orange, which can only occur when coins make up a smaller proportion of realized value. This occurs when young coins mature and age to become older coins, which creates, number two, swelling of older bands, which is in yellow, as we'll see here in just a second. But as the volume of coins held at a stronger hand, long-term holders classified age brackets grow, a decline in these bands, which corresponds to growth of next oldest band, would start to invalidate the thesis. So we see right here again, just so you guys know, the red and orange right here is the younger bands. The yellow is the older bands, the swelling of the older bands. We are for sure seeing that grow right there. Moving on. Jeb, did you have any thoughts there before I move on?
No, that's really interesting. Can you scroll up and pause on that really quickly? So the swelling that we're seeing right there is the long-term holding. That's really interesting because, I mean, obviously this is something that, Tim, you just talked about a second ago, so I'm not going to reiterate everything you just said, but the fact is the more people are holding Bitcoin and taking out a supply is a very strong indicator of confidence in the market. So seeing that improve is a very, very, very bullish long-term signal.
I want to just pause this real quick because we have a bunch of super chats that we need to catch up on here real quick.
We're almost done, so we can take a break and then finish it out.
Yeah. So let me scroll all the way back up here so I can find, and guys, let me know if the audio sounds good. I've had to play with it this entire stream because everyone's like, oh, it's too loud, you're too quiet. But let's see here. Oh man, do you think you can see it? Because it's not letting me scroll all the way back up.
Also, while you do that, just so everyone knows, 1,800 concurrent viewers. That is awesome, guys. I think that's a week high for us right now. 853 likes. So you guys definitely beat Smay's prediction, beat mine. Jeb, what is your prediction by the end of this live stream of likes, what we're going to be at?
I think we can get to 1,200. I believe we can get 1,200.
Jeb's new bet. Let's prove Jeb wrong and beat 1,200 for sure. So go ahead and smash that like button. Smay, I'm trying to dig well.
So the last one that it's showing me is from Envios Doritos. So should I just start from there?
That's the one I think that was the last one.
Okay. Okay. So he says, napkins on me, folks. Let's go. Then we have another one from Tom Wilkes, he says, don't forget to tip your server. I love that they're all in on this.
I love that everybody's in on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, really so far, this is a really expensive dinner. That's all I'm going to say.
I know, right?
And then we have from an expert crypto student, this is all I can afford. Portfolio is super red. Look, all of it counts, man. All of it counts. We're just as happy. Daniel, the last name, he says, allow me to take care of the dessert. So we have two people on dessert now. That's crazy.
Let's go.
Let's go.
They're covering. This next one is my favorite. This is a good one.
Okay. Expert crypto student. Bearish divergence on crypto Tim's hairline.
Actually, if you look at it, I don't, you know, how do people like, so I guess they're going to read it this way. If you look at it, it actually had some bearish movement right here, but we are heading back up. Definitely bullish.
Yeah, that's not bullish.
No, it's funny. I have had this hairline since I was 17 years old. I am now 27. So that makes it 10 years. I thought I was going bald in high school. I will say it has put up a good fight, but I would love to go ahead and just shave it, go bald. I have a wife, however, that disagrees.
I've been bald. That's the story of my hairline.
Picture,
all right, we have another one from Super Googly Lee. He says, Jeb, get well soon. Get well
soon. Thank you, Super Googly Lee.
He's been a champion today.
We had two more, right?
Okay, so
one more.
Tommy Liu, enough with the haters. If you don't like them, don't watch. They are people with feelings and clearly providing value for free. Show some class.
Oh, my gosh.
Shots fired.
Ooh. We got one from Matt C. Since we've got dinner covered, how about we get breakfast set for tomorrow so you guys can be ready for another great show?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm starving and you guys
at
are
this
talking
point,
me. I'm
no, hold
actually
on.
Go get better.
Jeff, at this point, we might have to take them up on this offer here.
I know, right?
I feel like they've kind of spammed it now at this point.
I've barely eaten anything in 4 days. I'm so
one
hungry.
One that we supposedly missed, Alexandro Inacio, which shout out to him. Alexandre, you've been a big fan. They said, Crypto Beard, because they're talking to me. I sent a $5 one saying, after all this food, the Tums is on me.
That's right. I do remember that one. I remember that
you,
one. Yep.
You guys are really thinking through it all. Like This is
great.
This
they
is
really
very
care
well
us.
Thought out.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Let's go ahead and I'm going to jump back real quick. We're going to finish this out, and we should be good. But let's see here. Yes, I need to click on this. Let me share the screen again. We are at the summary. So again, summarizing all this up, the summary of the bull case, we have a net entity growth, which remains positive as fewer entities are destroyed and more are created. That one was really big. The amount, no matter what's happening, the entity is still growing. The amount of people involved are still growing. Again, that's a massive argument against a bear market. Exchanges have seen net outflows after a steady period of inflow since mid-May. Again, we're seeing more hodling. Miners are in net accumulation, suggesting sell pressure due to the great migration being mitigated or offset by accumulation by profitable miners. So again, more holders. And a lot of times the miners are the best idea of when to hold, when to sell. And then long-term holders and bull market hodlers appear unshaken by the volatility of low prices. The volume of coin held in illiquid state continues to grow, and the potential supply squeeze is coming from a much higher base than the 2018-2019 bear. I'm assuming a cycle. This demonstrates the remarkable conviction of Bitcoin holders to weather extreme volatility. That is what we have. We had other articles we talked about, but we can do that in a different video because we are definitely running long. I knew that article was going to take a long time, but I did feel like it was very important because I think that is potentially the most pressing issue that any crypto holder or investor or trader has been asking, is are we actually in a bull market? Are we actually in a bear market? Even yesterday we talked about on the show, we read an article talking about how even the shorts, like even the bears who are trying to short Bitcoin are kind of in a spot right now where like, I'm not 100% certain if I should enter this trade. Obviously bulls and people wanting to long the market are kind of like, I don't know if this is the time yet. I want to wait for the bottom. But wrapping this up in a pretty bow, Jeb, what are your thoughts? There was one thing I saw on the technical chart that I was going to show people. My plan was to show people, but I'll let you speak first. And then if we want to, I can set it up about the EMA or the 100 crossing or the 200 crossing the 100 death cross that we just saw. I went back and did some history looking at what happens to the price usually afterwards, but I will let you, Jeb, kind of talk about what you want to, and then maybe I can show that here in just a second.
Yeah. So guys, it really comes down to this. We saw too big of a rally. So now we're seeing too big of a correction.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. We rallied too far, too fast between October of last year and about what, March or April of this year, whenever we hit $65,000, we rallied way too quickly. We didn't have any corrections. We did not do it in a healthy way. We built it all on hype and FOMO. And when you do that, it catches up with you. And it caught up with us by having a giant correction. I said, while we were sitting up at $60,000 and $65,000, guys were rallying too fast. You can go back on the channel. I talk about it almost every day. I said, we're rallying too quickly. I'm not confident in this. We need to have a correction. These corrections that we've seen are not deep enough. And so now we're seeing it. This is not something that we should be scared of. This is simply the market operating in the natural way that it normally does. We're seeing that the market is going through all of the corrections right now in one big, massive correction rather than in three or four little smaller corrections that we should have seen on the way up there. We really should have gotten to $65,000 probably 3 months from now and done it a little bit slower and would have been more healthy. But that's just how this goes. We're seeing that we're in a rapidly maturing market. There is so much capital investment coming into this space. It's ridiculous. We don't see this happen, guys. This is incredibly, incredibly rare to see an industry grow anywhere near as fast as we are. We're seeing the amount of institutional interest in this space go up by orders of magnitude in just the span of a couple of years. So we're growing incredibly fast. We're going to see some volatility. Of course, we saw that we rallied too quickly, so we need a bigger correction. I think that we do still need to pull back a little bit more to continue shaking out those weak hands. But I think we're going to find that bottom relatively soon. And I think that we will probably be back in an uptrend here in the next few months.
Gotcha. Well, before we leave out, I did want to go to the chart real quick. And Jeb, obviously, you're going to be able to see this. So chime in if you disagree with me. But I just wanted to point out a couple things observationally. So first and foremost, as we saw here, we talked about this yesterday a little bit when Jeb was out. Last week, Jeb showed us how we were entering into this descending triangle. What happens with descending triangles? We usually bake bearish. However, we also, in a shorter time frame, we're in a descending wedge. What happens when we're in a descending wedge? We usually break bullish. Now, what's funny is, and Jeb, tell me if I'm wrong, how often do we see this play out this far into the descending triangle?
Normally, you don't see this happen. Normally, you see it happen if there's a lot of conflict in the market, whenever you see the bulls and the bears are very evenly matched. So I'd say this is actually a good sign that we went this far into the descending triangle pattern. It means that the bulls held on for dear life. They held on for a long time, which means the bulls are probably not much weaker than the bears. But the point is they are weaker than the bears, but it's not 80% bears, 20% bulls. It's probably more like a 48% bulls and 52% bears. So look for a correction, but also keep in mind the bulls are a lot stronger than they might look.
I also would love to know, Jeb, and I will have to look for this and find it, but I would love to know how many people had, stop losses set up right there around 30,000 that obviously they got timed out of. But we did confirm we broke bearish out of this triangle. But what's more interesting, and I'm going to pull it up for us right here, is when we look at the 4MA, so right here. So obviously this was big. A couple of days ago, we had this death cross. I'll make sure that you guys can see this death cross right here. Now, here is the thing. As we've talked about the last couple of weeks, death crosses, the reason that it is called death cross, I keep forgetting where I'm looking at the camera. The death cross is something that was named by institutions trying to scare retail investors out of investing. So earlier when we saw the 50 cross the 200, this was a massive one that people were like, oh no, does this mean that we're going to go drop? But we saw historically when the 50 crosses 200, that actually usually is the confirmation that the worst of it is over and we're going to be moving back up. However, what I did find by doing my historical analysis, shout out to what was just recently done on CT2A. If you guys do not know what I'm talking about and you're a CT2A member, make sure you go check out Jeb's video on historical analysis that we released. We released that last Friday, right, Jeb?
I believe it was last Friday, yes.
Yeah. All right. So you guys will see. I'm going to show you guys real quickly. I went back and marked every single time within the last couple of years that we saw a death cross of the 200 and the 100. So I'm going to zoom in. You guys, I don't need to show you exactly, but what you guys can see is I showed the price drop as we eventually saw a 54% decrease when it crossed back in the November of 19. We had another cross here the 16th of April back in 18, in which case we saw a 60% drop right here. Moving even farther. Let's see. I want to scroll it a little up so you guys can see it a little better. We had this situation was a little bit different because we had two very close to each other, one on the 29th of April, one on the 8th of October. But we saw, depending on which one you want to deal with, let's see, let me go to this little one first. It was something like 53% drop right there. But if you want to go back to what happened in April, we had a 63% loss. If we go back even farther, I don't even know if I did this one because I don't know if I went that far back. But either way, yeah, no, I didn't. Either way, going back to what we currently have, this is an argument I will say that potentially we might see a drop based off of this historical analysis, because traditionally it does look like this 100 crossing the 200 has been the most severe indicator that we have seen. Now, we have a lot of fundamentals that counter this. As Jeb says over and over and over again, technical analysis works until it does not, because the market doesn't just respond based off of what the technicals say. The technicals just help us make a better prediction. But I want to give this this due diligence. I want to allow it to have this argument that if we followed a modest trajectory of what we currently have done and currently have seen, which I'm going to say 50% somewhere in there. If we were to see a 50% drop continuation from this, nope, wrong chart. Sorry, my bad. I used the Fibonacci rotation. No, the price drop. If we were to see a 50% drop, it will bring us down to about 16,000. If we saw it all the way down to 60, which would be worst case scenario, we would go down to 13,000. So while I'm not thinking that's going to happen, as we talked about earlier, the fundamentals, the hodling, the institutional pressure to get in, would I think tell a different story? This is something that technically speaking, we do have to be aware of, because Jeb, am I not right in saying that, you know, if we're looking at historical analysis and we have to have that as a potential price point in the future, correct?
Yeah, no, we definitely need to be paying attention to what has happened historically, because remember, guys, technical analysis is defined, I define it as the art of using historical information to predict the future, is more or less what we define it as. So historically, whenever there is a cross like this, there's generally a pretty big correction. What we don't want to get too caught up with, I mean, we want to pay attention to it. Let me rephrase that. We want to pay attention to how deep those corrections were, but we also need to take them in their context. And Tim, this is what you were saying, so I'm not contradicting you. I'm backing up what you were saying.
I would love for it.
What we want to make sure that we're not doing is saying, okay, this happened, so we're going to pull back 60%. We want to say, okay, right. This happened, so we went down and we pulled back 60% in this context. Mm-hmm. So what is our current context? Our current context is that we've already had a major correction. Our current context is a lot of the miners are offline, but they're coming back online pretty soon. We're seeing major institutional interest in the space. So we're seeing a lot of fundamentals helping to support the price that we did not see the last time we saw many of these major corrections. So it's really important that when we're doing technical analysis and we're doing that historical analysis, that we make sure that we keep things in context, because if you take anything out of context, then you're going to miss out on the majority of the value that you would get from it.
Well, and like I said, that was my caveat, is that we have fundamental analysis that counters it. What I was saying was that, everything you said was 100% true. It's just one of those things that we have to keep our eye on and make sure that we are very aware historically this has happened.
Yep.
And again, what I would love to do, what I did not do, is I would love to go back and do some deep, 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 deep research on historically what was happening around those dates. What were the fundamentals? Obviously, I've been of the opinion for a while now that Bitcoin is in a completely different world that it's been in the past, because never in the history of Bitcoin have we seen this many people captivated by it, both being lovers or haters of it. So it is we're definitely a very interesting place for Bitcoin. But wrapping out this stream, Jeb, what are your long-term feelings? I'm not going to ask you for a prediction, but a long-term feelings about where we think the price will go and kind of play out for us. Maybe like, hey, by this time next week, we could possibly be around here. By this time next month, we'll probably be right here. And then maybe by the end of this year / next year, we will probably be at this level.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to tell you where exactly I think the market's going to be a week from now, because I haven't been analyzing it for the last 4 days. But I do think that we're going to be spending some time below 30,000. So for the next week or so, that's the majority of what I can really say on that. As far as where I think we're going in the next several months and on into the next year or so, is I think that we're going to spend some time down here around this $25,000 to $45,000 region over the next several months. As we start to see a lot of that value in the cryptocurrency space turn over, we start seeing a lot of people that were at a loss selling to people that will now be in a profit because they're buying in low. And as that continues to occur, and as people continue to sell those losing positions, sure, they're going to be sad, but the people buying it are going to be very happy, and the amount of people that are going to be in profit is going to go up. We're also going to see the market continue to go to the downside, more than likely, probably not a whole lot, but at least a little bit, and trading sideways. So we're going to see a lot more institutions looking to get into the space. So in the next few months, I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but I expect before the end of the year anyway, we're going to see quite a bit of bullishness start to come, but it's probably not going to be really quickly. It's probably going to be more gradual. It's probably going to be kind of a curved uptrend and rally like you saw at the beginning of 2019. You didn't just see the market explode. You saw it kind of start slowly, 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 and then it started taking off. I think we're going to see something very similar to what we saw in 2019, the very beginning of it, where that market starts to take off. So by the end of the year, I could very easily see Bitcoin sitting back up $50,000 or more. It's hard to tell anything more specific than that. You guys know I'm incredibly bullish on Bitcoin. I think it's going to $1 million in the next 10 years. As far as the particulars, it is difficult to really tell that, though. But I do think the rest of this year will be, in general, sideways movement and bullishness.
All righty. Yeah, no, that was great. So what we're going to do now is, since we're a little bit over time, we're going to go ahead and finish out these super chats. And then, unfortunately, guys, I'm going to have to take Jeb and Tim away from you guys just because we're a little bit over now. So let's go ahead and let's see. The last super chat we did not read is from Matt C.
There's a lot.
Oh, did we read that? We read the Matt C. one. Okay. So we have from Casey Powell. He says, I'll get the complimentary mint.
Yep. There we go.
That's what we needed. And then Corey, sticking with the breakfast theme now, says, God bless you guys. Pancakes or waffles? I'm a pancakes guy.
Although I love waffles,
too. I love waffles.
They're both so good.
They're so good.
It's like, how do you... Man, I'm gonna need some waffles. Yeah,
and then they're the same thing, just different shapes. You know, they have different grooves and stuff. It's the same thing.
Although I will say, a crappy pancake is better than a crappy waffle.
That's potentially true.
Like the baseline is usually like a crappy pancake. Anyways, so we have. I'm sorry, I cannot say your name because Guilherme Lima.
Yeah,
I tried.
Lima.
Yeah, that looks right.
Coffee is on me. Let's go.
Yes.
And then Fee Energy says you can't have dinner without drinks. All right. And then we have one from Brad Prusa. He says, Tim, love you preaching the word earlier. Wasn't watching live. Well, there you go. And then we have 4BY Grace says, Psalms 107:20, he sent his word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. Get well, Jeb.
Come on.
Then we have a Bob again. Whew, Bob. Ooh, Bob. He says, since you guys are quarantined, this should cover delivery as well.
I'm so hungry.
Then we got another one from Doggish Doge says, thoughts on viral video Elon Musk saying Daddy Doge to Mars. He's done it twice now. Video is on Daddy Doge Twitter. They are blowing up because of it. With the market cap only at 10 million, goodbye?
If the price is being driven by Elon Musk's Twitter account, don't buy it.
If the price is being driven by somebody saying Daddy Doge to the moon or to Mars or whatever, then you know and not to buy it.
I have to add a caveat there because I know somebody in chat is going to think they're smart and say, oh, but it wasn't Elon Musk driving Bitcoin. Yes, and you shouldn't have bought it at that time because it was overextended. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
All righty. So, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it out. Jeb, since you're here, do you want to go ahead and wrap it out for us?
I can wrap it out for us, guys. My voice is feeling better than it was a while ago.
I'm just going to warn everybody, right? The system's not that efficient like the one at the studio, so this might be an awkward close. I'm going to try my best to time it right.
That would just make sense with how the last couple of streams.
I'm going to time it right.
Awkward is my middle name.
I'm going to try it. But it might not work. So, all right. You ready? Go ahead.
I am ready. Guys, before we wrap it out, if you did enjoy today's stream, make sure to smash that like button. Consider subscribing if you haven't already. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at CryptoJeb and on TikTok at CryptoJebOfficial. We are very, very active over on those platforms. And you can also get more information about how I am doing over on Twitter if you are interested. Also, if you haven't already, make sure to sign up for LuxAlgo. It is a fantastic, phenomenal indicator pack that we're using in our technical analysis. We didn't use it in today's stream, but we have hundreds of people that are subscribed to us that are using it. It is really very handy with all the different signals that it has that will help you to find good entries and exits. The link for that is in the description box down below. Guys, I want to thank Tim and Smay for how well they've been doing. So give a plus one to Tim and Smay in chat for helping to cover for me so that I'm able to take care of myself. I very much appreciate every single one of you watching. Before I go, though, I do just first want to thank each and every single last one of you for watching again, as always. And I will see you guys in the next video. Peace.
Oh, I got a real good feeling.